Movie Squad is sponsored by Luna Palace Cinemas, WA's premier independent cinemas, bringing the best film content and cinematic events to Perth. Come and enjoy the Luna Palace experience.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fittler.
And my name is Simon Murato.
This is the podcast version of your weekly edition of Movie Chat, broadcasting on RTRFM 92.1, Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. with breakfast host Pam Bolan. And we cover international releases, American releases, local releases. And we get in early with a film that I'm very much looking forward to, which is a new West Australian film that you talk about, Simon, in the second half of the show.
That's right. He Ain't Heavy, a film that we've been waiting a year to see almost, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Opens in a couple of weeks, but we're getting in early with my review of that. But first, we do have to make way for one of the great masters, Tristan. You take a look at probably one of the most anticipated films of the year, certainly on a global sense.
Yes, we look at Megalopolis, which is the new film from Francis Ford Coppola, a kind of passion project, one that he has put his own money behind and has willed into existence, and it's out in cinemas at the time of recording. And yeah, we talk about it on air, but I think we might have a little bit more to say about it, but we'll hear a little bit from the trailer right now to give you a sense of what this film is about, if you could even summarize it. This is from the trailer to Megalopolis.
One filmmaker has always been ahead of his time.
Time's up!
From visionary writer and director Francis Ford Coppola comes an event nothing can prepare you for.
Imagine today's society as a branch of civilization about to reach a dead end. Is this way we're living the only one that's available to us?
Every Friday here on Brekkie, we take some time for the cinematic arts. We look into the brains of the blockbuster babe, Simon Murato, Tristan Fiddler. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ah, so good. It's our last Radiothon Movie Squad for 2024, the last one that falls in the Radiothon bracket. So before we get into Movie Squad this morning, I wanted to say a big thank you to everyone that's got in touch with a little bit of love for Movie Squad, sending out lots of love to folks who have put it in their little notes that they are subscribing specifically to Breakfast because of Movie Squad. It's really lovely that this segment has been going for almost as long as the radio station. And these folks have been around for such a long time. Simon celebrating 14 years?
Yes.
Was it 14
yeah, last
years
week,
recently?
14 years.
Of being involved with RTRFM. And it's a beautiful space to be. You can still subscribe and donate until September. Well, you can subscribe and donate all year long. But until September 30, you subscribe and donate and you go in the running to win, frankly, a ridiculous array of prizes. They're pretty impressive, pretty delightful. If you want to find out more about it, jump on rtrfm.com.au and while you're over there, donate or subscribe if you can manage it. We're going to get stuck into some movies though. There's some business to get across, some movies to review, but I want to talk about what's been going on in your lives outside of the movies that we're reviewing. Any headlines, anything sticking out to you at the moment, anything in movie world that we really need to know about going on? I feel like we should have a headline segment, but we don't really have time. You know?
Here's what's hot in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know any headlines, Tristan. I was off last week, as you duly noted on the air. I've begun taking the substance, popularized in the movie The Substance. And you know, you got to talk with your family. Is it right for you in your home? But look, it's working great for me, and I'm 7 days in, so no side effects. But I did watch a lot of movies while at home. But again, I was watching movies like Harakiri and Clute for the first time. So that's just an indication of how maybe disconnected I am from whatever is going on headline-wise.
Okay.
Tristan, are you across the latest breaking goss?
Well, the first thing that came to mind is a film that we'll be covering next week, which is Joker, was it?
Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux. But like recently, Lady Gaga, who is in the film playing Harley Quinn, announced an accompanying album called Harley Quinn.
I saw that.
Which I think is covers, but one of the songs that she's kind of like previewed or released, I can't remember the name of it, but it's an old song, but it was also used as the theme for Kath and Kim.
It's called The Joker.
The Joker, that's right. So there's been a lot of fun chatter about that, you know, people going, oh, is Lady Gaga a Kath and Kim fan? But I think it's just, she's just covering a song that's got The Joker in it, and it's like a nice coincidence. But, you know, that's good that there's a Kath and Kim connection to the, the Joker sequel.
A very serious movie with a very silly connection. I love it.
What are the headlines for you, Pam?
Oh, I don't know. I feel like I've been looking at the rumoured castings for Wuthering Heights and been a little bit, I'm unwittingly participating in that conversation via my TikTok for you page. I feel like there's a little bit of heartbreak about who was cast as Heathcliff. I don't know if I'm totally jazzed about it myself, but I'm not offering an official comment just yet.
Okay, you're withholding.
I'm withholding my thoughts. Now, it's meant to be directed by, is it Emerald Fennell, mm-hmm. who's directing Wuthering Heights? And the sort of rumoured, or I guess reported casting, I don't want to, you know, get in trouble if it's wrong. The reported casting is Margot Robbie and yes. Jacob Elordi.
Yes.
Now, look.
It's a tall Heathcliff, yeah.
It's a very, the tallest man on earth. But I feel like, a commentary I've seen besides the comments that Jacob Elordi's white and Heathcliff is noted to not be white in the book, besides that commentary, I've also seen that these two actors have iPhone face or smartphone face and they can't be starring right. in a period drama. And I would have to agree that I think I might agree with that sentiment. And anyway, I would like to say that I would have loved to have seen and support the idea that Dev Patel could have been Heathcliff.
Oh, yeah.
That's been a popular suggestion. Have you two seen this hanging out in the headlines?
No. I just saw that it was announced, but it was more about Emerald Fennell's possible take on Wuthering Heights. That was because she directed Promising Young Woman and Saltburn, and that was just the thought of, you know, what is she going to do to this? Is it going to be true to the novel, or is it going to be a bit, you know, but who knows? Let's give it all a chance.
Yeah.
Wuthering Heights with Elordi and Robbie.
I don't know if I just, yeah, I don't know.
What Tristan's trying to say is, what's Heathcliff going to do to that moor? What's he going to do?
How are they going to work in the Kate Bush song, a little tinkle of a piano here, but not the full?
You know, I want to see them, like, you know, running down a hill and swinging their arms around. Okay, well, let's get into the actual movie business. Enough of the headlines. We'll get into our first movie, a movie I'm definitely keen to hear your thoughts on. I have seen a little bit of discussion about, but I haven't seen myself. Tristan, talk to me about, hang on, I'm gonna get this right, Megalopolis.
Yes, what a title.
You've heard of Allopolis, right?
Megalopolis.
You've heard of Allopolis. Well, this one's mega.
Megalopolis.
Yes, you know, is it in contention for the best movie that starts with the word mega? We'll leave that question to the end. But this is the new film from director Francis Ford Coppola, you know, a master filmmaker who has made classics like The Godfather Part II, The Conversation, Apocalypse Now, one of my favorites from the early 80s, Rumblefish. But this has been a long-awaited passion project that he's been, I guess, developing or working on since the 1980s. There have been different parts in the timeline where he has intended to start making this. But it's at the point now where he is, like, later in his life, in his career, and he's put his money where his mouth is. He sold stake in a Californian winery and put his own money into this passion project, $120 million into this film.
Is that because nobody else wanted to put money into it?
Pretty much, yeah. And you'll hear a little bit why with the story. But it has also been beset by controversies, and there's been reports of the chaos and some of the kind of shenanigans on the set. And it debuted at the Cannes Film Festival, and it's received very mixed response, and now it's out in cinemas this week. Now, Simon, I know you've been reading a book about Francis Ford Coppola as well.
Yes, I just finished a book called The Path to Paradise by Sam Wasson, and it's not a Coppola biography by any stretch. It's very specifically about the making of Apocalypse Now, the making of One from the Heart, and how that was effectively him parlaying all of the juice he'd accumulated from this string of, you know, one of the greatest strings of classics or great films in American history, and that flopping, and then ultimately the making of Megalopolis, although it's a very small part of the book. But it actually, you know, I sort of read it in preparation for Megalopolis, and one of the things we can discuss later, Tristan, is that it kind of became a bit of a key to understanding Megalopolis and Francis Ford Coppola's kind of vision of film sets as communities and as utopias unto themselves, and his desire to make Megalopolis his way. Good for him. It's the ultimate realization of the dream he's had over the decades that's been sort of stymied by the money folks or whomever has questioned his authority.
What's the kind of realization? What's the result of the realization?
Well, a little bit of background to try and summarize some of what this film is about, because there's a lot to unpack and we won't have the time to do it. Maybe a little bit on the podcast version of this episode, but it's based on the Catalinan conspiracy, which is something that happened in 63 BC. It creates parallels between Rome and America, and it creates this alternate reality called New Rome, which is basically New York, but everyone's kind of, all the men have those kind of like gladiator haircuts, and the fashions kind of mix in the modern with the kind of the old world looks of that era. And it's basically about someone, an architect who works for something called the Design Authority. His name is Caesar Catalina, played by Adam Driver. In the first scene, we see this kind of strange scene, which was released in advance of the film, where he steps out of the top of a tall building and stops time. He just says, "Time, stop," and it stops. And then time is a theme in this film, but his actual power is that he has a dream of building this city called Megalopolis, this kind of utopian vision of a new kind of way of living, a new city, but he is frustrated in parallels to Coppola's own filmmaking journeys by the money men, by a mayor played by Giancarlo Esposito, who is against him due to previous beef. His daughter, the mayor's daughter, who's a bit of a club rat, is played by Natalie Emmanuel. She is falling in love with Caesar and wants to kind of be with him. Meanwhile, there's also a wealthy uncle played by John Voight, who's in charge of the bank. He's got a son who is a bit of a terror and has a vendetta against Adam Driver's character, who's played by Shia LaBeouf. And then we've also got a TV presenter called Wow Platinum, played by Aubrey Plaza. So,
Wow Platinum.
The casting, there's a lot more people in it. The names, though, that's really going to kind of like set people off going, what's going on? And this film is very strange. It's very kind of creating this mix of the modern and the old, and it's quite something. Look, I want to cut to chase and get Simon's seen it as well, and we'll have a little bit of a discussion about this. But this film is a folly. It's an interesting failure. I mean, I'm glad for Coppola to make this film, and I think some people will get a lot out of it based on what they know about Francis Ford Coppola, the love of his previous movies, of an artist achieving his vision. But as an experience, I I found it a bit confounding, a bit confusing. At the screening that I think we were both at, people applauded at the end. I joined in that applause, but it was more that, oh, it's over. Like, you know, the experience, I can exhale. And this film, I think, gave me the opposite effect of its intended themes and utopian vision, where I just felt like, maybe we need to pause art for a while, because this is just too self-aggrandizing, too self-indulgent. Look, I'm still kind of not sure what I thought of all of this, but I think I'm more of the negative side than the positive side. Simon, what did you make of Megalopolis?
Oh, look, I'm sure. And I was pretty certain pretty early in the film, as it was unfolding, I was like, oh, it's bad. like, it doesn't work. And again, it's one of those things where I was glad to have seen it, and I was intrigued while I was watching, because I was like, well, where is he going? How is this going to zig? How's it going to zag? But one of the funny things to me is that there's so many folks out there, and I get it, because it is a very unique film, who are like, there's no way to, you can't give a star rating, you can't review it, it's kind of a, and it's like, no, like, at the end of the movie, you have a pretty clear idea of the shape of the thing, and it's a failure, like you said, and I think it's a, I don't even want to necessarily say it's an admirable failure, it's an intriguing failure, for certain, but the whole thesis of it is so muddied, because it's about this idea of what imagining what a world could be like instead of having to work within the constraints of society. And that's a metaphor for filmmaking for Coppola, but I'm sure there's aspirations there that we take with us into our life and our vision of politics and society. But it is similarly stymied by the fact that he is a devotee of the auteur theory, in the sense that this is my vision. No one's let me make my vision ever. I'm going to have to pour my own money into it. And I dare say that this is, you know, while totally appreciating the work of the actors and the craftspeople and all the community that contributes to it, this is like unfiltered Coppola. And in the same way that Cesar Catalina keeps saying, we need to have debates about what a perfect city could be, he's kind of the boss. Like, it's a movie that doesn't really imagine a utopia. It just imagines new management. And I actually thought that was a pretty dispiriting vision of the future. Also, the only cool thing about Megalopolis is they have a bunch of golden travelators everywhere. When we finally see Megalopolis, you can just get places quickly on these travelators. So even the imagination and vision of it, I thought, was actually fairly limited. So, no, unfortunately, Megalopolis, even as a future camp classic, I thought was pretty dull. Pam, are you a fan of the works of Francis Ford Coppola? I mean, this is a guy who's made, obviously, some of the great films, but has also made movies, you know, I'm not sure if you've seen them, but like Jack with Robin Williams. He made Bram Stoker's Dracula with Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder.
I feel like this could be one of my fatal flaws as somebody that participates in Movie Squad, is I don't know how many Francis Ford Coppola movies I've actually seen. I think I'm a fan from a distance. Like, I know that I'm meant to appreciate the work. I like the idea that you've said it's unfiltered Coppola, and maybe his actual best work is with the filters, is maybe with the people that help make those decisions, help refine those decisions. Although, you know, the idea of this might have been exciting and great. Maybe him going completely, like, you know, no holds barred is a little bit worrying. I'm kind of curious about the performances of the big names in this film, though. They're names that I love. Aubrey Plaza,
John Voight, Shia LaBeouf.
not them. but Aubrey Plaza and Adam Driver are people that I, you know, would watch a movie for. I would go to the movies to see them. Are their performances in this good, or are they just completely sullied by the fact that it's a bizarre and sort of unsatisfactory movie?
Well, I would say that Aubrey Plaza, I think, is one of the more entertaining parts of the film, in that she's giving a very over-the-top comic performance. Adam Driver, I think I've just, you know, I like him as an actor, but I think over the past performances that I've seen of him, and he's the center of the movie, I think he's just a bit stiff. Or, like, I felt like watching this movie that I was in the audience of a stage theatrical performance that he was in, and they built a movie around it. And I just wondered about if maybe he gives a lot to it, maybe he takes away a lot from it. I don't know, but I don't know how you felt about Adam Driver, Simon.
Yeah, look, he I think we're at a stage now, you know, the Patterson Adam Driver, that film, I think is long in the rear view. And you hire Adam Driver to be big, and I think Pacino, modern day Pacino, is probably your best comparison to what he's doing here. How much of that is Coppola's direction? But I think we've seen enough now from Adam Driver to kind of get his thing. Aubrey Plaza, I think it really helps that she is a deadpan comic actress. And though there are dramatic things for her to do in this movie, kind of, I feel like she kind of gets the tone of this. She gets the camp of it, you know, for however you want to define that. And so when she's on screen, the movie is at its best. And she's in it a lot. Like, she's one of the main characters. Unfortunately, a lot of the other performances are pretty flat. And I think Shia LaBeouf, obviously a detestable human being, but in this film as well, is both annoying as a character, but I think even as a performance is, like, misjudged.
Okay. Well, I guess I watched the trailer and I thought it looked like a really bad ad for CGI. I just was like, what is going on there? So, you know, fair warning, if you watch the trailer, it might dissuade you from watching the movie. We've had a couple of people get in touch that have seen the movie or had thoughts about it. Ashley actually got in touch even before we said that this is what we were reviewing to say that they had to go see Megalopolis when they heard about it being a vanity project for the director. It was nothing special for them, but did enjoy watching all the actors' performances as they varied so much. That's from Ash in Osborne Park. Thanks for getting in touch. We also heard from Chow getting in touch to say, what you're describing sounds like Brazil from Terry Gilliam, Strange Days, Catherine Bigelow, and Richard Kelly's Southland Tales.
Yeah, Southland Tales is a big, I don't want to say influence, but a big comparison point. I think, and that's what I mean, like Megalopolis is unique to Francis Ford Coppola, and it was a fun experience to go see the movie and watch the audience kind of turn on it a little bit, I think. Maybe that applause was sarcastic at the end, Tristan. That was my read of it. But at the end of the day, there are movies like Megalopolis. Like, it's, you know, and there's even a live in-person element that we haven't mentioned where there's a scene where Adam Driver's got a press conference and he speaks to the audience, and at screenings, someone comes up to a microphone and pretends to ask the question. And in certain festival screenings, they've had actual performers, you know, speak the line to Adam Driver. That's not necessary in this context. But again, it's like, okay, cool. But it's still not a boundary exploding exercise in my mind.
A little disappointing, this movie, it sounds like. Well, I'm sure there'll be more hot takes delivered for you on the podcast version of this episode, because these two are a little, look, you can be a little funnier and a little sharper, you know, a little spikier on the podcast, maybe. We're going to get into a little track and a little break before we come back and talk about He Ain't Heavy, a new West Australian film.
Focus on your breath.
How's everything going?
Soften your eyes. Look around.
Gotta get that door fixed. Can't keep fixing things. Mum, I know that this looks crazy.
Just take a moment for yourself to pause.
But I feel like this might work.
This is Spinal Tap, Stonehenge, but also this is Spinal Tap, the movie.
Yes.
Tristan, why am I playing this song?
Just a taster. But yeah, Trash Classics is on tonight at Luna Leaderville, and we're screening the cult comedy heavy metal classic, This is Spinal Tap. So tickets are still available, but yeah, a great way to see this music comedy classic on the big screen and hear the rest of that song. One of the funnier, I mean, the whole film's funny, but that sequence is hilarious as well. So
you know what? I just don't know who Spinal Tap are. I had to Google this when you told me.
Wow.
Yeah,
we'll
get
to find out tonight.
Wow, I'm really admitting, you know, haven't seen that many Coppola movies. I've seen all the Sofia Coppolas, but I just haven't seen that many of the Francis ones. You're listening to Movie Squad here on Breakfast. I'm with Simon and Tristan, our blockbuster babes. We've been talking a little bit about the latest Coppola flop, the Megalopolis. spoiler, but no, you can go see it if you want. Tell us if you do. 0405 921 921. But we're moving to something a little more local and getting into a new West Australian film. Simon, talk to me about He Ain't Heavy.
Yes, we're getting in early with a review of He Ain't Heavy. It's a film that was shot in Gosnells, actually.
In Gosnells?
Yes, that's right. Is set in the Perth Hills, was shot in a home in Gosnells, and comes from director David Vincent Smith. Tristan, I've been really keen to see this film for about a year now, because we were at the WA Screen Culture Awards in 2023, where this walked away as probably the night's big winner. I think it won four prizes, including Best Feature with a budget over $1 million, and won a Best Performer prize for actor Sam Corlett. So I've been really intrigued by this one, and it opens on October 17, but I believe there's some, you know, special Q&A screenings over the next few weeks, so that's kind of why we're giving it a bit of an early berth. So check your listings, certainly at Luna Palace Cinemas. But it is a movie that has a fantastic and compelling intro. It begins with a young woman named Jade, played by Leela George, who is sort of descending on this suburban street. It's very late at night. Someone is screaming and banging on the door to a home trying to get in. And she gets closer and closer and kind of works her way behind the house, enters, and inside she finds a woman, Bev. It's her mother, played by her real-life mother, Greta Scacchi.
Oh, wow.
Who's actually sitting there, despite the yelling, kind of casually watching, you know, the equivalent of Married at First Sight or something. And we come to learn that this is actually pretty par for the course for them. The person banging on the door is Jade's brother, Max, Bev's son, played by Sam Corlett. He's an addict. He's been a junkie for a number of years. And it has kind of been the animating event of their lives. They've all been in this kind of stasis because Jade's always having to kind of solve the problem of Max or be terrified what's going to become of Max. They've tried to get him help and the systems have sort of failed them. And they're at a bit of a loss as what to do now because he's at quite a dangerous state. So they ended up clearing out that house that Bev's living in. It's going to be sold. And Jade, while she's doing this, in sort of an act of calculated desperation, she turns one of the rooms in the home into a cell, into a cage, effectively. And she tricks Max into coming to the home and locks him in the room as a way to forcibly dry him out, sometimes through very violent means. Now, this is a film that obviously has a, you know, you might look at that on paper and say, well, that's a very problematic way to try and rehab someone. And it's a film that definitely doesn't suggest this is what you should do. I do know that, or I'm aware that it's a semi-autobiographical film for David Vincent Smith. I think this is a heavy extrapolation of what someone might be driven to do out of desperation. But I found it an incredibly powerful film. I have to say, I'm always a bit dubious about Australian movies centered around drug addiction, mainly because that's just such a persistent theme, Tristan. I think you'd agree that there are plenty of movies about that. But the performances in this film, the tension of it, and the complicated nature of this brother-sister relationship that, again, does get quite dark, I found really compelling and really beautifully performed. Tristan, I know you haven't seen He Ain't Heavy Yet, but what have your thoughts been about this movie over the past year? Are you keen to catch up with it?
I'm very, very keen to, because David Vincent Smith I've been following and very keen to see what he does for his first film. And that, you know, it's touching on a topic that I'm sure will resonate for a lot of people dealing with, you know, that situation, not that specific situation that the film is kind of probing, but the sense of the way that addiction is not just about the one person, that how it affects a family, how it affects the people around them in the community. So, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to this and heartened to hear this great review of it.
Yeah, it is really good. I actually, you know, there was part of me watching the movie going, oh, you know, if it was just that little bit more audacious, you know, maybe a little bit more twisted, and I mean that in the sense of, you know, I'd love to see, like, how far can you extrapolate this story? Like, where can we really take this to? Effectively, it is a, and I say this as a compliment, it's a melodrama, it's a kitchen sink drama, but it works so well, and I think it keeps finding ways to heighten the tension while still feeling very human. Pam, does this intrigue you?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I went to school in the Perth Hills. I grew up around that area. So the idea of something being set there, it's a really relatable, as you said, story. We understand this story, especially from an Australian perspective, because of how many movies have been made about it. But I really am interested in Sam Corlett. I remember seeing him in The Adventures of Sabrina.
Sabrina, yes.
Yes, he plays Caliban or something in that. The sort of new reimagined, sort of spookier version of Sabrina. And I really liked him in that, but I didn't realise he was Australian until I saw him cast in this and I did a little looking up and I understood. And he does seem really compelling in the trailer for this movie. The lead actress also does seem really compelling. So I'm interested in this story for sure. Is it really violent in the way
that
it's...
No, it's not really violent, but there's a violence to it. Like, it's just a violent experience for these characters. But it is not a gory film by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah. It is a harrowing movie, but I think well worth viewing. It's like an M-rated film.
Yeah, gotcha.
So, yeah, it's heavy-hitting. It's rough stuff emotionally. But I think a really, like you said, Tristan, it's going to be a very relatable sense of emotion that comes from the film, if not the literal experience of what happens in it.
There's a wide release of this film, but October 17, it's going to be screened at Luna Leaderville with a Q&A with cast and director is what I've got here in the notes. So if you... Oh, that's on October 16 is the Q&A with the cast and director. Have a look on Luna Leaderville to find out a little bit more about that screening. But for this week, that's it for Movie Squad. Listen for the extra bits and bobs on the podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, Movie Squad is what you can find and hear all the good bits and bobs there. Simon and Tristan, thanks very much for another great week.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Now, I think with the time constraints, we were sort of having to compress, particularly giving some attention to this upcoming West Australian film, but one that I am very, very keen to see because... I don't know David Vincent Smith that well, but I've followed him. I once did an episode of the Midnight Special podcast where I interviewed former employees of video stores, and he came in and had a chat about that. So I appreciated, that some of his background, being a video store clerk. But he has been, hard at work. I think he's made a short film version of He Ain't Heavy, which led to the feature length, but has always been, I think, a part of the local film scene here. And I've always appreciated his tastes and what he is kind of interested in. So I'm keen to see how that's applied to the story, which sounds like it's also very personal to him as well.
Yeah, and the filmmaking is really good, and I think, there's a sort of backhanded compliment we sometimes give Australian directors on their feature debuts or even, well into their career, where we say, it's a calling card movie.
Yes.
Like, the movie's not actually good, but it will get them good work. but I think this is actually a really impressive film, and I really enjoy is the wrong word, but it's the right word, because any film that's good is enjoyable, right?
Yeah.
So, I think it holds a lot of promise, but unto itself, this isn't an Aussie film or certainly a WA film where I'm saying it's good, but you should support it. What I'm saying is, no, it's actually good. I think it was a really impressive movie and quite, like I say, just powerful is the word for it. And it kind of goes there, certainly in its last act, and I really recommend it.
Yes, so He Ain't Heavy. There's a Q&A screening on the 16th of October, but it'll be in wider release on the next day, on the 17th. But one to earmark in your calendar and check out, and I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. But it's interesting to compare to the previous film in that you have, I guess, both are personal projects. I mean, they're different levels or scales of exercising that or kind of putting that to film. But I think with to come back to Megalopolis and to have just a few more words about that, it's something where, I guess it's like tipping my hat to someone who is putting, their money where their mouth is. And it seems to be like at Cannes, I think that was also where the Kevin Costner epic, Horizon, and apparently he put his own money into that as well. So that's an interesting stage where, these kind of, and particularly for Coppola, who's always had that push and pull, tug of war with the studios, with getting his vision out there. And I guess to me, this brings up the kind of the whole idea of late style, which is the term that gets banded around with film circles, which is, I guess appreciating directors in their older age, and that often, there's the classic rejoinder of that, the new stuff will never be as good as the old stuff, that a filmmaker's prime is where their best material is made. And I guess late style is about appreciating those directors who continue on, who are older, but still make interesting work, even if it's kind of marked by maybe being a little bit out of touch or not being completely, on board with CGI and special effects. But I guess examples like, there are people who are fans of Clint Eastwood and the films he makes in his later period. And then, the auteurs that we love that, you could still applaud and celebrate a film that's maybe not as good as their older work. But with Coppola, I've not seen his last three films, which were kind of under the radar. There's the horror movie Twixt. There's the film about the brothers, Tetrio, and then Youth. But they've all kind of had their defenders or their people who hold them up going, this is, actually good or really interesting. Now, with Megalopolis, The late style, I don't think quite works here. And the use of the CGI, the use of the special effects. Yeah, I wondered if, and you were mentioning this before off air, if it was more smaller scale, if it was more of a kind of like less using some of those kind of tools and was a bit more down to earth, maybe the themes, the ideas could have registered more. But because it's sort of wrapped up in these, you know, these presentations or these, they feel like, you know, the visual designs you'll get from an architect, the pre-visualizations, it just sort of falls down.
It does. And there are some scenes that are actually shot on location in New York, like in the streets of New York. Mm. Not the protest scenes towards the end of the movie, which are very naff. But there are some moments where it feels like, you know, Shakespeare in the Park in the streets kind of thing, right? Yeah. And they kind of worked really well. Like, there's a fun moment with WoW Platinum and Cesar Catalina where they just meet each other in the street, and he gives her a coat because it's freezing cold. That moment kind of worked for me, and I would have loved to have seen another stymied Coppola film where maybe he only has $30 million to spend on this, and, you know, we have to use our imagination a little bit. And, you know, it kind of made me think of, and some of these are quite bad, but even the modern day Shakespeare films, and I'm thinking kind of like, when Ralph Fiennes did Coriolanus, and even the version of Caesar Must Die that was set in the Roman prison, if you saw that one. I feel like, you know, the metaphor could have sung a bit more neatly. I actually think that by being able to depict this boundless imagination, it reveals the limits.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the problem. And late style is an interesting phrase. I've actually not heard about like that particular parlance. And I think it's worth noting that, you know, Francis Ford Coppola, The Godfather, Conversation, Apocalypse Now, these movies are 50-odd years old, you know.
Yeah.
The last film of his I liked was Dracula,
and
that was 30 years ago. And I think it's worth noting that the last movies he made in the last 15, 20 years were effectively experimental art cinema on micro-budgets, certainly the last two. And, you know, he's been playing in a different pond for a while now. Mm. And so you kind of got to regard like, well, it's the same filmmaker, but it's not the same filmmaker. And so I do want to meet him on that level. I watched for the first time recently One from the Heart, which I'd never seen before. And I felt like it was actually quite good to kind of go like Apocalypse Now, One from the Heart, direct to Megalopolis.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good chain. Like, I can see the logic to the chain. Mm. And that's why I feel more confident saying like, you know, putting aside late style, I think this is not prime Coppola, but like what Coppola has tried to achieve for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's a folly, like you say. It's an actual failure.
And that's, I only saw One from the Heart recently myself, like a year ago. And there's another director's version that he's brought out. And that film, you know, that was another example of him putting all his money behind this idea. And it's an idea, I mean, it's a beautiful film. There's true art to the way it looks, to the soundtrack. But at the center is a couple that I never felt compelled about, and their journey about kind of leaving each other and then, you know, coming back, you know. It's similar to this where it's like, well, there's all this kind of money and everything put towards it, but then I was just thinking, where is the in for an audience? And if he's kind of going, well, this is art, but it's just like, how's an audience going to kind of like, what are they going to get from this? And from the main character that Adam Driver plays, being kind of at the start, he's this kind of serious artist, but then he's also a bit of a kind of, you know, he plays the fool. He's a bit of a kind of a rake. And it's just kind of like, I was very confused about the character. I wasn't sure why he was wanting to make this city and what it would give to people. So it felt very, I guess, disconnected and very out of touch. Even at the end where it feels like you're just getting a kind of a TED talk.
Totally. And putting aside, like, where's the in for the audience? Where's the artistry?
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what I mean by going from Apocalypse Now to One from the Heart to this, where I similarly thought that One from the Heart ultimately is a failure too, right? But there are stretches of that film where I was like, actually, I love this. Or you know, this is incredible. The middle half hour or middle, you know, 20 minutes of that movie, there's some spectacular filmmaking throughout, but in particular in that moment. Through this, you know, it felt like all previs
You know, it felt like everything was the prelude to the great movie that was going to be made.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's really discounting a lot of hard work that was put into it. But there was no moment where I was like gasping at what was being achieved. Mm. And that's again what I return to. It doesn't feel like boundless cinema. It feels like a movie that is very much inside the box of what movies have been.
Yeah.
And actually have probably been surpassed by now.
Yes. So there you go. Like, you know, if you end up seeing Megalopolis, you know, we'd always be interested to hear your takes and your reactions. Before, you know, we wrap things up, I thought I'd give a bit of space because you were away last week when we talked about The Substance, which I know was a film that you saw and didn't get a chance to talk about on air. But I just wanted to leave space to hear your reaction.
I'll be very brief because I thought Laura gave a beautiful review last week and it was great to hear your thoughts as well, Tristan. But I'll just say I love The Substance. Mm. I saw it at a screening that was not very well populated, but there was about 40 of us in the cinema. And the catharsis of that final sort of act, you know, it was such a invigorating movie to watch in a cinema and kind of just want to pump my fist in the air like over and over again at what was being shown. But ultimately, you know, that's sort of about the body horror of it all and the you know, catharsis of its climax. But I actually do think that it is a very, you know, it's a very obvious film in its themes. But I thought it was a really powerful, you know, not to overuse that word today, but a film about the kind of terrible pact we have with our own body, you know, the human body. And that really resonated with me. And I felt really affected by the movie, by the experience, by the performances. It is a very broad, gross film. It's a very silly satire at times, a very silly comedy. And there are some very funny moments in it. But when you boil it down, it's a film about this terrible relationship we have to the most important thing that we will carry with us forever. And I found that incredible. So yeah, look, it's definitely one of my favorite films of the year, and I'm okay leaving it there because I think we'll be talking about it when it comes to top 10 time.
Excellent. So there you go. If you've needed another reason to go see The Substance, which is still in cinemas now and definitely one to experience in a cinema, check out your listings. But thank you so much, Simon. Thank you to everyone who listens to the podcast. And as Pam was saying at the start of the show, it's another final week for Radiothon. But please subscribe, donate, particularly if you like enjoying what we do each week to hear us talk about films. This is only possible due to the station, to the equipment, to the staff, to everything that kind of helps make something like this happen. So to see that being, you know, to basically express your appreciation because we appreciate you listening. Please go to the RTRFM website and go to the Radiothon section, subscribe, donate, give what you can, and we'll catch you on the next episode.